I'm Farid Guillot, and we're at the Welcome Center along Celebration Way on the first day of AirVenture 2010. And of course, this is the first edition of this new show we're bringing out. We're going to be here all week from today through Saturday with lots of guests throughout the week. Some people you recognize, some you don't, but they all have a great story to tell. I'd like to welcome first, of course, our very first guest for this show, and that is the CEO of Cessna Aircraft Company, Jack Pelton. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you. It's great to be back at AirVenture in 2010.
The last time we talked, it was the 50th anniversary of the Skyhawk. Yep. And you've owned a Skyhawk, I've owned a Skyhawk, and you tell me that it's now the 50th anniversary of the Cessna 210.
This year we're celebrating two big milestones in our great history of our company, and that's the 50th anniversary of the Cessna 210, which the Centurion, which was one of the, and still remains to be one of the most popular airplanes flown by general aviation pilots today. And then on top of that, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Cessna 208 Caravan, which is our turboprop utilitarian airplane that's serving around the world.
And serving ably in many, many applications, including very ably in the relief efforts in Haiti.
It played a huge role in Haiti. When the earthquake occurred, there was no major runway access that was available. And with the Caravan and its high wing, we were able to clear out some roads and be able to land in remote areas in Haiti. And there were, you know, numerous missions flown every day with lots and lots of food and supplies and volunteers to help in that relief effort.
This airplane is very, very versatile. What are some of the more unique modifications you've seen on the Caravan?
Well, over the history of the airplane, we've continued to upgrade it and modernize the airplane. And today it sports a three-screen G1000 avionics system, similar to what we have in all of our single-engine airplanes and the system that we have in our Citation Mustang today. It also has the TKS anti-ice system on it, and we're also offering it with a Oasis interior, which is a similar interior to what we put in our Citation jet. So it's gone from being the mainstay of being a small package delivery airplane with FedEx to now being a utility airplane with the luxury of a Citation jet or any variant in between. We've got two of them on display down in our booth, and we'd be more than happy to show everybody what we're doing with that product.
And how many airplanes have you brought with you?
We have brought, let's start from one end of the display. We have brought two Caravans. We have the 172, the 182, the 206. We have the Corvallis TT. We have the first marketing demo airplane of the new 162 Skycatcher on display. We have a CJ-2 and two Citation Mustangs. And one of the Mustangs we just unveiled about 30 minutes ago, our new High Sierra Edition, which is a special edition offering of the Mustang in a special livery and paint job and interior scheme. So we have the whole fleet there.
Now, for a company like Cessna that has had a whole family of aircraft over generations, and we talked about all the legendary aircraft and you're celebrating anniversaries, how do you ensure repeat customers to move up to the larger models, and how do we do this with new pilots?
Well, we have, unique to this industry, we have what's called the Cessna Pilot Center, and that is over 300 training facilities across the United States that provide flight training in Cessna 172 airplanes and soon to be in 162s. On a computer-based curriculum that allows a student to go through a very regimented system of getting them through their private and on through their instrument training. And it's also portable, so if somebody were to relocate or move, that same training curriculum would be available at any Cessna Pilot Center around the world. So that gets people into aviation, and then we, with our product line, we're able to move them up through those various products. And then for those who own legacy products, one of the things that our company does that most of our competitors do not is we still continue to support any aircraft we have built as long as there's 20 of them flying. And so that goes back a long, long ways. And I personally own a Cessna 195 that was built in 1954, and I needed a new aileron bracket for it, and I could order it through the company, and they had the part.
EAA Radio Live, we're talking with Jack Pelton, a CEO of Cessna. Coming up next here at EAA Radio Live will be Hal Weekly, a B-17 pilot known to many of you who have flown on aluminum overcast. And then we're also going to speak with Art Knowles, who owns the only civilian Harrier. That's the jet that levitates. But right now we're talking with Jack Pelton. Tell me about your first airplane ride.
Well, I was fortunate. I came from a family that owned a Cessna 140 when I was a little kid. So from the time I was about 3 years old, I was flying in the right seat of my dad's Cessna. My mother was also a pilot. So I was lucky to have grown up in the in an aviation family.
And what's the first plane? So that was the first plane that you owned too?
No, that was the first one I got to ride in. Now, the first plane I owned was actually a 152 in Long Beach, California, that I flew the pants off of it when I was growing up, putting hour after hour on it, trying to learn how to get it right.
What was one of the things that you learned about flying in California?
Well, at that time, Long Beach Airport, which was back in the 70s, was one of the busiest GA airports in the world. So it was a good place from a towered airport to really understand complex operations and the safety that was necessary to operate correctly over the years. It instilled good discipline, but it also gave you a better insight as to what went on in the total air traffic control system and how to operate within that.
Why did you join the EAA?
I joined the EAA back when I was just out of high school because I had the opportunity to go to FLABOB, where EAA chapter number one was, with my dad when I was a kid. And we used to go to all the air shows out there, walk up and down the flight line, and to be able to interact and understand more about how airplanes are built, all the intricacies of beyond just flying airplanes, EAA gave me that opportunity to really learn and learn from people who had done it hands-on.
And you also restore antique aircraft.
I do. I have a 1942 Ryan PT-22 that happened to... That's the airplane my dad learned to fly in, and it came from the same airfield he learned to fly in California. And then I have a 1954 195 that I mentioned that I brought to Oshkosh in 97. And after I finished restoring it and put it on display and won a bronze Lindy in it, which was a neat story because the airplane was owned by Clyde Cessna's nephew, Dwayne Wallace. And it sat for 20 years, and I bought it from his widow. And the last time it had flown was to Oshkosh back in the 80s and had won a bronze Lindy. So it was kind of a return to home and give it its due reward that it needed.
Way to keep up the reputation of that airplane.
Exactly.
You are the chairman of the EAA Gathering of Eagles, which raises money for EAA youth programs. Why are you so enthusiastic about this?
Well, you know, I was fortunate that people gave me the opportunity to get into aviation at a young age and exposed me to aviation. And today we're suffering from what I believe is a real concern long term, which people have probably heard me speak on many times, and that's the fact that the new pilot population is dwindling. And the Young Eagles is an excellent opportunity for those of us who are in aviation to give back. And give back in a way that by just taking a young person, getting them a flight, getting them introduced into aviation, and hopefully it will catch them like it caught all of us to continue on and pursue their dreams like we have. The gathering on Thursday is the annual fundraiser that really is a great gala of an event and raises a lot of money to put back into the program to get kids into flying and provide scholarships and provide the network to keep them going.
So how do you motivate people to participate in this particular cause when there's other really popular causes like hunger, homelessness, things like that?
Well, you know, you can't minimize the need to give back for other social causes, but this one's more of a professional undertaking. I won't, because I also participate heavily in a lot of other social issues, but professionally, we need this industry to grow. We need to make sure that we have the future in front of us, and our future is our youth. And so when you look around and look at our young folks and you think of what aviation can provide as far as good careers, good jobs, ability to make good incomes to be able to provide and be productive citizens, aviation is a great avenue. So I think what it has done for all of us who are involved in it, this opportunity to give back and show them that opportunity is out there for them and help them along the way is really all you need to understand to be able to participate.
So it's kind of difficult to sell aviation to the youth. You have to cut through the electronic gaming and the social media and things like that. And how do we do that?
It is tough. There's a lot of other attractions, or I might refer to them as distractions. And I think, you know, we have our challenges, but if you get somebody out there and they get a chance to see the mechanical attributes of an airplane, what flight is all about and the learnings, and again, what where it can take them potentially professionally. You just hope that it'll ignite that one spark, and you know, you're playing the odds. You got to introduce 10 to get one, so you got to get out there and plant those seeds.
You know, many people were watching to see if Cessna was going to enter the life support aircraft market, and you did with the Cessna Skycatcher. Last year, your wife took delivery of the first production serial number, and EAA got the next two. Is production? How's production going?
You know, we had some setbacks in the certification program, and we got through those, and that has slowed us in our ramp up, and we're seeing encouraging signs every day. Our head of marketing was over at the factory just last week. Ships number 22 and 23 were being built on the assembly line, so it's coming along and coming along quite nicely, considering what we've had. The exciting thing about the airplane is we had a young Eagle or a young EA cadet that actually ran over to one of our folks who said, "You're from Cessna, aren't you?" He said, "I had a chance to fly the Skycatcher and wanted to let us know what a wonderful airplane it was." So to hear that we are making inroads with youth is very encouraging.
The FAA has talked to becoming further involved with the certification of LSA models. Currently, the original rule leaves certification to ASTM standards. Is the current process working? What changes would you make?
Well, we believe the process is working. And again, we may be advantaged because we already have the infrastructure and processes in place in our company, because that's what we do. We build airplanes. It may be harder for some of the other companies. I think it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that as an industry that we keep the highest safety standard, because the last thing we want is incidents or accidents that will cause people to really question what ASTM is about. The key to that standard is it really helps reduce the certification cost, which lets you field a product at a lower price point. And we have got to find ways to continue to support that and keep the FAA involved, but not let us get to a point where they put unrealistic regulatory requirements that just would make it not affordable for the light end of GA.
I don't think we can let you out here without talking a little bit about fuels. It's a hot topic because of the anticipated phase-out of 100 low-lead. Of course, that's been going on for 20 years. We've been talking about this, but it's in the news lately. As a manufacturer, how are you planning for the transition to a new fuel that basically doesn't exist yet?
We as a manufacturer, what we're trying to do is really start pushing the legislative agenda to get a new fuel tested and certified that will be a replacement fuel that all legacy airplanes can run on. I think the key to that is we continue to endorse it needs to be a fuel that doesn't ground anybody. You know, there's some proposals out there today for an easy solution, which would be a 94UL, and the 94UL is great for some airplanes, and it's certainly okay on some of the new engines coming forward, but I can't afford to look at all of our Cessna customers who have engines that it won't run on and not be there in their court fighting and defending to try to get a higher octane fuel. Problem is there isn't one that's got a clear path yet. There's some that are out there people are looking at, and we're saying that's great. Get them all to the FAA. Get the FAA funding necessary to be able to test and certify and see if we can come up with that solution that will satisfy all of GA.
Jack, thanks very much for joining us today.
You bet. Good to see you.
Jack Pelton, CEO of Cessna Aircraft Company. Coming up next, Hal Weekly, B-17 pilot. From the Welcome Center, you're listening to EAA Radio Live.